it's a point of departure to try and understand, you know, who these people are within technology spaces, but we might then try to understand who technology types are in different environments.
The tinkerer, the observer, the sharer. Which internet user are you? This week on Download This Show, understanding the subtle differences in the way each of us uses the web, plus the domestic violence prevention app that's hidden on your phone, and can you really download a bit of software that tells you the government is spying on you? Well, get set to find out, because this is your guide to the week in technology, the internet and culture. My name is Mark Fennell, and welcome to Download This Show. And it is a very big welcome to our panel this week. She is the editor-at-large for techly.com.au, and she's the editor of PC Mag Australia, Claire Porter. Welcome back to Download This Show.
So great to be here.
And Luke Hopewell is the editor of Gizmodo Australia.
What up in the heezy?
You see, you need a second title like Claire does. Don't forget, you can join in the conversation on Twitter. The hashtag is Download This Show. Now, first up this week, a brand new app has launched. It's a news app. It's called Buzz News, except it's actually not a news app. Claire, what actually is this Buzz News app?
It's a domestic abuse app that hides a list of secret contacts in the help section, so that if you are in a vulnerable situation at home and you don't feel like you can disclose to your partner what you're doing, you can get help without them finding out.
What a fascinating concept, Luke.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, the concern that was expressed a little while ago by a study that came out is that quite often in domestic abuse situations, the abuser will not only be, you know, partaking in physical abuse and emotional abuse, but also a high level of control over the abusee's life. So that will also include controlling a phone and making sure that they're not calling someone or telling someone about what's going on in the home, so that they can't, you know, get in trouble for what they're doing. So hiding this sort of stuff inside an app is actually a really, really interesting idea, because it means that they might think it's just a normal news app, but you're actually using it as your cry for help, which, you know, giving people resources for that is fantastic.
So visually, paint a picture for me. What does it look like to use this app?
It looks like a news app. It's got Buzz News on the front. It's a very generic logo. It's got a categories of world, entertainment, sport, and national. And then there's like a little help section. And hidden in the help section is where you can hide your contact list of people that you would opt to turn to in times of trouble. And then you simply swipe left and swipe right across the top of the app to get help.
There's a weird kind of dynamic here where in kind of promoting the app itself, you're also promoting awareness of what the app itself does. Does that get a little bit complicated? Are they kind of banking on lots of abusers not listening to things like Download This Show? Which we would hope.
We would certainly hope.
That is not the go-to radio show for people that abuse their loved ones.
We would certainly hope. But, I mean, obviously, this is a great idea. And ideas hopefully can ideas that are helpful like this can hopefully spread very, very quickly. I mean, having apps that act as a panic button, for example, with a swipe left and swipe right, as Claire said, that's a fantastic idea. And if we have more of them, that rising tide will lift all boats, so that we can say, look, this is the app that started it, and we can talk about that, but there are many apps that are in the background that you can actually go and download that maybe aren't as well publicized, so you can keep them on your phone secretly.
What would you change about it?
I noticed that when you actually are sending that cry for help, it just actually diverts to your messages app. So if you're concerned that your partner is going through your messages, Buzz News isn't going to help you. It's just disguising the first part of what you're doing. But if you happen to get caught on the messenger screen before hitting send, you're in trouble. And if you forget to delete that cry of help and somebody looks at your phone, you're in trouble there again. So I wonder if they're inadvertently putting people at risk by forcing them to rely on the traditional communication methods. It would be better if you could actually send the message within the app, like WhatsApp or Snapchat, so that you don't ever have to use the traditional communications interface.
I also believe that if you really want to go hardcore and really hide what's there, like you can go into the help section and it does have that in there. They're relying on nobody going into a boring help section, but it depends how much somebody's looking at your phone. If they find an app that they don't recognize, they're going to go and have a look at it now that they know this functionality exists. Maybe have a section that's password protected with that messaging section in it, so that you can have another layer of security and be talking to someone who can give you advice and have peace of mind on the communication that you have.
Also, the instructions for how to do it are a little bit complicated. I read it about 3 or 4 times over before just going, all right, maybe I can figure this out myself. And if you're a nervous person or you're in a nervous situation, you either need to have preloaded that information at a time where you're calm and safe and rely on that, because it's not necessarily obvious from the language what it exactly is that you're supposed to do. It becomes more obvious as you just try to use it, but those instructions did not help me.
Gestures might also be a good idea. When you use the new Google Maps app, for example, and you get really annoyed, traditionally you shake your phone going, goddamn thing, why won't you work? And then it actually brings up you're having a problem with Google Maps. Tell us what it is and we'll try and fix it. You know, going to that help section if you're in a situation where you're not calm and things are going off, you really need to be able to jump into the Buzz News section and maybe just shake it and indicate to the phone that you're in strife.
Yeah, it's a little too intricate. Even like the swipe left and swipe right. Like if I were in trouble and I was like trying to do that, I would be nervous that I would then seize up and the app isn't reacting the way that I need it to. Like you need it to either be one touch or one shake, and there you've got your cry for help.
Download This Show is what you're listening to. We are in the studio with the editor of Gizmodo Australia, Luke Hopewell, and the editor of PC Mag Australia, Claire Porter. My name is Mark Fennell, and now it's time for this. The tinkerer, the self-improver, the humanist hypersharer, the make-doer, the spectator, and the content creator. Which one of these are you? Because these are the broad categories that our next guest believes most digital users fall into. His name is Dr. Jonathan Hutchinson. He is the digital ethnographer for Sydney University. Welcome to Download This Show.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me.
I did not realise there was a digital ethnographer. What does a digital ethnographer do?
Well, a digital ethnographer is someone who is embedded within an online environment for a reasonable amount of time to try and understand the social goings on within a space.
Embedded in a digital environment sounds like the world's greatest euphemism for spent lots of time on internet.
It's exactly what it is. Yes.
All right, I want to break this down for us. So I'm going to say them again so people can kind of start thinking about where they sit. The tinkerer, the self-improver, the humanist hypersharer, the make-doer, the spectator, which I'm going to rename the lurker, and the content creator. I want to start with the humanist hypersharer. Paint me a picture in my head of who this person is.
That's the person that when you reach for your phone in the morning and you have a look at your, let's say, your Instagram feed, for example, they've put a lot there. The TMI person, too much information person. Yeah, so the person who wants to share everything, every aspect of their life, whether it be I'm on holidays, here's the snapshot of my aeroplane wing, or I'm having brunch, here's my food shot.
Those people.
Yeah, do they annoy you?
I actually am one of those people. So.
It's all right, you're amongst friends.
Okay, in terms of the process you go through of identifying these, walk me through that. How do you work out the differences? Because it strikes me that there's actually a lot of potential for overlaps or combination personality types is in there as well.
Yeah, and I think one individual is, you can't say they're concrete. It's a point of flux between all of these types of characters where you would identify with one and, you know, it's fine to shift into another category. You know, for example, the person who's the self-improver might actually use technology to better themselves or learn information or gained some sort of knowledge in some particular area, who then might transgress into the tinkerer, for example. So they're taking that knowledge that they know, that they've found, and then using it in a way that they can, pull a piece of technology apart to improve it.
What's the value of cataloguing this? Like, once you understand this, what are the sorts of takeaway bits? What do you do with the information once you have it?
Well, there's two ways that you could approach this. And so this piece of research starts as it's a point of departure to try and understand, who these people are within technology spaces. But we might then try to understand who technology types are in different environments. So, for example, mobile communication areas or online specifically.
We are talking to Dr. Jonathan Hutchinson, the digital ethnographer from Sydney University. So far, we've been through a couple of the different categories of digital users. We've talked about the humanist hypersharer. Tell me about the tinkerer. What defines a tinkerer?
The tinkerer is that person who's just never content with the technology that they have, or they're trying to improve it in some way. So they're the person who has the soldering iron and the screwdriver, receives a new piece of technology and goes, really like it if that could do my television and change my air conditioning temperature at the same time. So this sort of got a person that would, you know, pull it apart, reprogram it, put it back together and make it a whole lot better.
So in terms of that person, I guess you'd argue that that person is probably, what, an Android user, so they can, you know, rebuild the skin of their Android phone. They're more likely to head in that direction. Am I drawing too many long bows here?
Well, I don't think so. I think you're hitting on an interesting point there, that it's actually, you know, with proprietary systems, they are somewhat closed down, but then that other space of the option to pull it apart and tinker with the insides is, you know, that's attractive to the tinkerer.
Tell me about the make-doer. Is that person just lazy? It's like, I'll leave Internet Explorer 6 on my computer forever, because why not?
It's exactly that person.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. The person who's just really quite content with what they've got. So, you know, they haven't updated their computer since, I don't know, 2004 and exactly. Exactly, they're on Windows 6, and they're okay with
that.
They're
fine with that?
Yeah, because all they do is they use Word or Excel or send the occasional email, and that's fine. So that's the make-doer.
I guess if I was going to place myself in this, I would probably end up being the content creator. But confirm or deny for me, what is it that makes a content creator?
So the content creator is the person that you walk past in the street, and they've got their camera, and they're blogging, they're Instagramming, as soon as they're taking...
That person sounds like a prick. I don't want to be that person anymore. I don't want to be that person anymore.
Sure. You know, that person that's in the street, in the cafes, in the restaurants, they're sharing everything that they have. Or perhaps they are those sorts of people that hang out in large media organisations that create content and publish it across technological devices.
Oh, good of you to just bring it back.
That's my gift to you.
You've played Knifey Spoonie before. Given your job as somebody that that witnesses and spends a lot of time watching online behaviour, would it be reasonable to suggest that you would be in the final category of the spectator?
Not necessarily. The spectator is...
Way to screw with my segue.
Okay.
I'm kidding.
It was a lovely segue.
I thought so.
Not necessarily, in that the observer is the person who is quite happy to watch other people create or use technology in new and exciting ways. So the person that popped into my head was my grandma when I was thinking about this, is that they would often be she would be the person who you do something fandangled with the whiz bang technology thing, and she, oh, look at that. That's, you know, that's more the observer type of technology user.
So which one were you in the end?
Well, I wanted to think that I associate the content creator with someone like, you know, Will.i.am. I wanted to be Will.i.am, but I don't know, I kind of turned out to be Katy Perry.
No,
I do. What's wrong with that?
He was the worst judge on the show. Sorry, go on.
Okay, so did I just TMI'd, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's like
totally.
Share too much. But I turned out to be the creator in the end. So, you know, I'm okay with that. That's fine.
All right, let us know which one you think you are: the content creator, the spectator, the self improver, the tinkerer, the humanist hyper sharer, or the make doer. You can let us know on Twitter using the hashtag #DownloadThisShow. And there's also a quiz you can take online, which we're going to tweet out a link to right about now. And if you can't see it right now, make sure you head along to our Facebook page and we'll link to it there. Dr. Jonathan Hutchinson, digital ethnographer for Sydney University, thanks so much for being on Download This Show.
Thanks, Mark. It's been fun.
And we are back here with our panel here on Download This Show. Luke Hopewell is the editor of Gizmodo Australia, and Claire Porter is the editor at large for techly.com.au and the editor of PC Mag Australia. And Claire, he's a nice guy, but you really don't like this idea, do you?
I really, really don't.
Why?
Because, for one, it's a study that was sponsored by Microsoft, seemingly to create a bunch of arbitrary categories through vendors can sell their wares to people. One of these kind of studies comes up roughly once a year, but the idea that it's being labelled as science to me is just atrocious.
He's a doctor.
A study that dropped into my inbox today said that there are not enough studies for journalists to write about, and it took a study to figure out why studies
somebody's
studied.
Messing with you. That's not real.
It doesn't matter, but you know what? I believe that there are communities to be studied as an anthropologist on the internet, or an ethnographer, depending on what you actually are. There are subsections of the internet to be studied and categories that you can put people into and define them as. But
Reddit, 4chan.
Yeah, but I mean, in this context, they're stupidly amorphous. And I'm sorry, but if you're studying classes and cultures and societies, you can't change them at will. That's not how that works. It's, you know, when you're talking about the way that people's behavior happens, and especially when you're trying to scientifically class it, you can't just say, oh, well, look, they've wandered into that category, for example, for a little while, and now they're coming back to this one. It's a little nebulous for me.
What are the categories that you think should be invented to describe people on the internet?
I've already pre-planned my list. Okay. Don't you worry. We've got the humble bragger, the men's rights activist, the activist, the outrage, the armchair expert.
That's fine.
The marketer. I don't know.
The marketer.
Look, I think depending on the platform, you can usually break people down into two different subcategories. It's people who are good at something and people who are terrible at something. Take social media, for example. It's people who are great at social media and it's people who share fake win $100 gift vouchers on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram the whole time. Take internet commenting, for example. You can either contribute to the discussion and be a very interesting person who shares their knowledge and their wares like you find so much on Reddit, or you can be an armchair asshole like everyone on 4chan and most internet comment boards.
And YouTube.
For YouTube, there's just one subcategory, which is if you're a commenter, you probably suck.
Or you're that guy that writes first.
First.
First comment.
Oh my God, first.
Oh my God, I'm so successful at this.
Did it on the internet.
Stupid thing that I do. We've collectively decided there's not an enormous amount of value in these particular categories, but there is value in understanding how online communities organically operate, because that is a fascinating subsection of psychology in general, surely.
I think what you find is by studying different online communities and how they interact with each other and also the platform that they're on can show how people react to not just each other and not just platforms, but to change. We've talked about the reinvention of Digg on this show, the social news sharing platform, a while ago. And the founder of Digg said that we killed Digg the first time by accident because we alienated the users we have by chasing users we wanted. That's a really interesting way that old users responded to change. And I think if you did a comprehensive sort of anthropological, scientific, not in air quotes, real science study on how these people reacted to this behavior, you could actually get some really fascinating insights into how people behave online. And that's just one subset surrounding one particular event.
You know, obviously we know earlier this year, Facebook unveiled the fact that they had been doing a lot of research onto how the crowd operates on their platform. So it is a viable space for research and study as well, Luke.
Absolutely. I mean, just today, Twitter has announced that they're now building more comprehensive profiles on their users simply by looking at the apps that they also have installed on their phone. They didn't have to change their terms of service to do this. They didn't have to update you and say, hey, we're going to be looking at this now. They just did it because you've previously authorized them to do it. By doing that, it means they can build a profile in the user and sell to them better by using promoted tweets. Mm-hmm. It's all about generating this data, and that's why people are studying you. That's why people want to find out who you are, how you react, what you do, so that people can sell to you better.
To Twitter's credit, though, even though they didn't actually have to advise you, they still did. And they put up there's a little card that comes up when you launch Twitter afterwards that lets you know they're doing it. So I give them a little bit of credit for that.
Well, isn't that good of them? They're collecting your data so that they can more effectively sell to you, but what they won't do is collect your data so they can more effectively prevent you from being an asshole on the internet. Like,
that
I just think one of the greatest lessons of 2014 is that brands will collect as much information on you as they can, so long as it means that they can sell you something. But if it means that they're actually going to be responsible for the behavior of its users or to better understand how they engage online or to offer better social engineering, they're not going to do any of that because democracy. But hey, you know, as long as we're being sold stuff, it's fine.
Where's the line with policing, though? Like, where's the line with how far you want your Twitters, your Facebooks to actually manage people's behavior? I love that you both put up your hands.
Yeah.
I have thoughts on this. I definitely need to say something.
Here's the thing. It's policing behavior means that someone sitting in the ivory tower of Twitter, Facebook, Google, anywhere, has to decide what is and is not appropriate. Now, they bring their own cultural context to that. And if anyone's ever read anything that's ever come out of Silicon Valley in the last 2 years, you know that these are not the people that you want actually policing online behavior, because all we'll have is just bro-sanctioned douchebaggery on the internet that will just lead to the unending spiraling of shit that we will just abandon platforms
for. Bro-sanctioning is my new favorite word ever.
I'm all about the bro-sanctioning and how it's
please
awful.
Please don't be.
And how it's awful.
I'm not saying the meaning of the word is good. I'm just saying the word itself, the creation of the word, I am mildly impressed with.
I'm going to go in the opposite direction and argue that what we have now is the result of bro-sanctioning, and what we need is less bro-sanctioning and more people becoming responsible for governing behaviours. You don't need to be a rocket scientist in order to understand that maybe you should punish someone for tweeting at them, oh, I don't know, go burn in a gas chamber, you effing Jew, which is something that I've had tweeted at me on more than one occasion, actually.
Block and report, man.
Yeah. You know, the fact, well, I did report
they shouldn't
it,
be doing it in the first
and then
place,
Twitter came back to me and said, sorry, this doesn't meet our terms and conditions, we're not going to take any action on this.
But you could still block, but it was that once you reported, they didn't do anything.
Yeah, they didn't do anything.
Well, I guess, what can they do?
They can delete accounts, they can bar people from using the service for a period of time, okay. They can alert their ISP. I mean, there's any number of steps that they could take. And I think, again, particularly in Australia, but also in the US, what is constituted as harassment offline doesn't seem to even bother people online. You know, I've been in touch with the New South Wales and federal police for stories and on behalf of people that I have had the unfortunate duty of interviewing because they have either attempted suicide after being harassed or have had to move house or move into a hotel after being stalked online. And there just doesn't seem to be any definition of what constitutes online harassment, and so there's no desire to take any action. And time after time after time, we're just seeing law enforcement communities just turn a blind eye. But if somebody came to my house and said what somebody said that to my face to what has already been said to me online, I mean, they would at least get thrown in the slammer overnight. But there's just, it's a double standard. See, these are the kinds of studies we need to be doing, not whether someone's a hyperactive super share or whatever it is.
Which is also a made-up word that doesn't mean anything at all.
There you go. We've done some science. Download This Show says, don't be a douchebag on the internet.
That just made the final interview montage. Download This Show is the name of the program you're listening to. And there is a brand new project going on overseas. A group of non-profits have come together with a plan to take back your privacy with a new free tool called Detect, with a K instead of a C. The idea is to scan your computer to find, believe it or not, government spyware. How on earth do they have the skills to be able to do that, Luke?
James Bond, mostly.
Mostly James Bond.
Yeah, mostly.
Well, that solves it, and we're done.
That's mostly James Bond and some internet. Basically, what they're doing is they're using known government surveillance techniques in terms of spyware and malware and things like that to actually say, well, we've recognized this. It's time for this to get chucked off your computer. It's all done in the interest of keeping people in regimes that might not like the idea of users and citizens having as much freedom as other people do to make sure that these people, like journalists and whistleblowers and things like that, can operate safely and knowing that their government's not going to kick down the door and black bag over their head.
But I guess the only way you can search for something, Claire, is once you know a particular bit of software exists. So it's got limited reliability in that sense.
The app also doesn't let you take any action. It just shows you who's surveilling you. So it's your decision what you do from there, but you know, as far as what this app can do, all right, now you know that you're being monitored, throw your computer out the window and start again.
Run.
Yeah. I did meet a really interesting group of hackers at DEF CON this year who had developed an app that did just this, but it also just blocked them with a single tick. It would just list all of the ways that you were being blocked, both from government and non-government sources, and just allowed you to boot them off your computer. It'd be nice to see them partner with these guys to see if maybe they can create a comprehensive interface that isn't sophisticated, because right now it's a pretty full-on tool. People with, you know, a Luddite's understanding of how the internet works will not be able to use this app. You've kind of got to have a bit of a background knowledge of how all of this works. What you want is for your average users to be able to use it.
This isn't for the layman. This isn't for internet users. This isn't for normal people.
This is
for people in you know, hardcore lockdown, Great Firewall of China sort of places. Because if you go, if you're a normal user and say, well, gee, I don't like that government spyware looking at my computer and looking at everything that I do and Tony Abbott just sprawling through my history, I'm going to go on Facebook and talk about it. Like, you've immediately undermined.
I love that you've constructed a whole character around that.
Absolutely. I worked on it before I came and everything.
What's
like
his motivation?
Well, look, I really think that he's just a bloke. He's one of the only people who still likes Fosters, you know, this sort of guy.
Oh, that guy.
You have to understand that if you're a layman internet user, you're probably already being tracked by private organizations more than you're being tracked by your government.
When we're talking about government surveillance software, what actually are we talking about?
There are a couple of different ways that you can track a computer. And obviously, all of these tools are ranging in sophistication from not very sophisticated to, oh my God, how in God's name are you doing that? So there's simple, like, obviously there's stuff that you can social engineer onto someone's computer in the form of malware or spyware, which just very quietly sits in the background, doesn't present itself with an icon or anything like that, or a running program that just basically tracks anything that, that the user wants it to. So it can be programmed to maybe listen in on connections going out through the Outlook protocol. It can go and have a look at your web browsing history. It can go and report back everything. You know, it could be a keylogger that logs your keystrokes or figures out what you print or sees files on a disk drive. There are a whole bunch of things that you can actually program these pieces of software to do, so that whatever you want to look at or spy on, you can certainly get access to that, whether you brute force it onto someone's computer by quote-unquote hacking in, for lack of a better term, and putting it on there, or by socially engineering it on there.
Not to mention commandeering people's webcams and microphones. You can be watched without knowing it, and in doing so, you could give away your location. You could just give away just information about your personality. Do you have posters on your walls? Where are those posters from? Like, what kind of beer are you drinking? And there are terrifying ways that governments and corporations can track you.
Is the biggest value of this almost in the placebo effect of it? Just knowing, having an awareness of what might be already on your computer makes you think a bit more about your relationship between yourself, the internet, and governments?
I believe so, especially if you are a whistleblower who thinks that, who has the objective of saying, I'm going to raise my hand and say that this is a bad thing. I'm going to literally blow the whistle on this. If you want, like, obviously you can pursue any means to make sure that you put your hand up and do that, but you want to make sure that you're successful in your mission at getting something stopped. Now, that might mean that you maybe take a couple of shortcuts and get in touch with someone through a non-secure means, through a non-secure channel, and start talking about this, where stuff can be subpoenaed or just read and hacked into and things like that. It certainly is good for everyone to have an awareness, not just people who want to be whistleblowers, but people like all of us, to understand the relation between the technology we use and the security and privacy we give up.
All right, that is all we have time for. This has been Download This Show. Very big thank you to this week's panel, Claire Porter. She is the editor-at-large for techly.com.au and the editor of PC Mag Australia. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
And Luke Hopewell is the editor of Gizmodo Australia.
Thank you.
My name has been Mark Fennell. Don't forget, if you are hearing this on the radio, you can podcast the show. Just look for Download This Show, or you can find us on SoundCloud as well. And thanks for listening to another episode of Download This Show.